Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I think this is the start of baseball season. Is there a team in Chicago called the Sox?
There is. You wouldn't know, though.
I wouldn't know that. My blind south of the river. All right. First case this morning is Peel versus Birch. Ms. Bort?
Good morning, judges. May it please the court. I appreciate this opportunity to be here today on behalf of Officer Roger Peel. He was a detective for the City of Portage Police Department for 27 years. I believe he started in 1992 and ended up retiring the end of December 2007. In the early spring of 2007, Officer Peel, the incumbent mayor at the time, Doug Olson, was stepping aside and had a hand-picked nominee for the Democratic mayoral primary, Olga Velasquez. And he had actually recruited her and come forward and brought her to run to replace him in this Democratic primary. Also running in opposition to Mayor Velasquez, who did eventually get elected mayor, was Steve Charneski. He was the head of the street department. He had also been placed in that position by Doug Olson. Officer Peel, having been a detective for these number of years, except for 1 year that he actually served as assistant chief, and having had a decorated career over the 27 years, many commendations, had always been, you know, concerned about appearing to do the right thing, very much a gentleman police officer. But that spring was different because Mayor Olson was stepping aside after many years as the head of the city of Portage as mayor, and he felt free to back who he thought would be the best candidate, who happened to be Steve Charneski. And during that spring, Officer Peel did what I'd like to believe that many of us will do, and that step forward and actively campaign for the person we think will be best for that, suited for that position, without any fear of any retaliation. Officer Peel, over having been there for the many years, was aware of the politics that be and how it affects the police department, and felt that he was free that spring to back who he wished. Really nothing significant happened that he was aware of over that spring. Things appeared along as usual. His supervisors didn't come forward, didn't criticize him. He wasn't written up. He wasn't called up on the carpet. Everything seemed to run along smoothly until we get into the night of the primary election. And Officer Peel was at the campaign headquarters for Steve Charneski and had spoken to one of the reporters that he felt had had unfair press coverage over the primary period and said, he was unhappy that the sheriff had endorsed in the Olga Velasquez, and he felt that the sheriff for the county should not have stepped into the local city of Portage politics and endorsed one candidate over another. And he said to the reporter, Sheriff Lane's not going to get any support here, meaning here at the campaign headquarters. Now, the defendants admit that at the time he was speaking as a private citizen on a matter of public concern. They don't argue that point. What happened, though, the following day, his comments were reported in the Times newspaper, the local newspaper, and the next day, on May 10th, he was called out of the field working a major case and was read a prepared statement by Chief Birch that he was being reassigned out of the Detective Bureau to a position called as a station officer position due to his personal views. And that's exactly what it said. And he was very shocked. After being a successful detective for all of those years, it came as quite a shock. A couple of days later, the Times ran another article, that a Times reporter had contacted the public spokesperson for the city of Portage to ask about Detective Peel's transfer out of the position, out of the Detective Bureau. And Keith Hughes, which the defendants admit, was the authorized spokesperson and was authorized to speak to the press, said he was being, it was a repercussion for the comments he made the election night. Well, the error, and we'll go forward a little bit, what ensued was that Officer Peel was transferred to a position known as the timeout room. It was a punishment, well-known punishment position. For anybody that really wanted to be a police officer, it was a punishment position. And that's where he was sent to spend the remainder of his time. He ultimately did retire. He had elected to participate in the drop program a number of years before. At the time, he had not intended to go ahead and retire at that time, but at the time you had to sign up for it, it was going to be a one-time option. If you didn't sign up for it, you couldn't later sign up for it. You could always back out of it and not retire, but you couldn't sign up for it again. Now, they've subsequently changed that, as government often does.
But by retiring when he did, didn't he get a pretty substantial bonus, somewhere in the range of $75,000?
Actually, what it was is a buyout, and it actually wasn't a bonus. He'd have been much better financially off if he would have stayed and continued to build his PERF and the benefits and kept his health insurance and kept his overtime pay that he had in the Detective Bureau.
But the buyout would have been gone if he didn't take it when he did, right?
If he didn't sign up for it, it would have been gone if he... And later they changed those rules that you could... Ultimately, they offered it again where you could sign up. But at the time when he signed up for it, they were being told it would never be offered again. And if you sign up, you can always back out. But if you don't sign up now, then you won't be able to elect it later. And I think this was done 3 years before the time period we're talking about. So, like many of the guys, he had a lot of years on the department. He signed up, figured if I want to back out, I'll back out. And Officer Peel was in good shape. And I wanted to also let you know that the surgery that he went to light duty for after he was transferred to the station duty position was an injury he'd had a number of years before. It wasn't anything that he had to take light duty at that point. He went ahead and did it because of the miserable position he was put in and the ostracism that he underwent after his transfer out of the Detective Bureau.
How long had he been on the Detective Bureau?
27 years. 27 years, a decorated and honored detective. Very successful. Mentor to many. One of the things I think is very important that the appellate or the district court looked at was when they looked at the number of instances that the defense later claimed were reasons for his transfer out of the Detective Bureau. And if the court will look closely at the citations to those particular I think there were three instances, and then just generally disruptive. Chief Birch and Assistant Chief Jolly never, ever witnessed any negative behavior on the part of Officer Peel at all. And the other citations to the record that they give you of the other officers doesn't bear out at all, if you read the testimony, what the defense alleges that it says.
Just as an academic thing, his rank and his salary remain the same.
His rank and salary remained the same. That is true.
What's he beefing about?
It was a horrible way to be transferred, to be taken, sent to the timeout room and ostracized. He also lost overtime pay. He lost, and even though they had a job description that listed many police functions, the reality was, and that was the testimony of the officers, those functions didn't exist because if you're not called upon to do it, then it doesn't really exist, even if it is on paper. I mean, essentially, it was a little room. It was literally, when you came in the police station, it was a little room to the right over here. Everything else, the patrol, the Detective Bureau, all the running of the police department was entirely separated from this little room. And like the longtime secretary to the Detective Bureau, she was warned directly. She testified. I was warned about being friends with him that it was going to affect me. Everything changed after this. It would have a profound chilling effect on the entire department.
How many officers in the department?
I'm not sure about the department. I know that I believe that there were 14 in the Detective Bureau, and I couldn't tell you, and I apologize for the number of officers on the department.
Rough idea.
I would guess maybe 20 officers plus the 14 detectives and then the support staff.
20 patrol officers.
20 patrol officers and probably 14 detectives would be my estimate based on having been to the police station. One of the things that the district court did was they disregarded a lot of my evidence that wasn't just focused solely on that particular night. Excuse me. Modern. Because they said that it wasn't pled in the complaint. I would submit to this court that it was pled in the complaint. In addition,
the complaint, pretty specifically in the facts section, focuses in on this election night comment, right?
Yes.
It doesn't really, I can't find anything in it about other election activities.
Not specifically.
Specifically, okay. So it's not there?
No, it's there in the terms of political involvement, political support, as far as his redress. Keep in mind that...
Where does it talk about political support, political involvement?
In the complaint.
Where in the complaint?
I don't know. I'd be happy to tell you.
I see something that says, in some pretty broad terms, constitutionally protected rights to free speech and expression and freedom of political association. These are fairly conclusory broad terms, but
absolutely
says nothing about his involvement in the campaign prior to election night.
Not the specific acts. You know, I campaigned and I walked door to door or things like that. It doesn't say that in the complaint.
Right, but, and it does say very specifically that he made these election night comments and then things went bad after that. It seems to be written with almost tunnel vision on election night and thereafter.
Because that's, at the time, before we started discovery, that is exactly what we thought. Excuse me, just
sure.
Get some water. That's exactly what we thought, was that it was fully related to that. That there was, as discovery went on, it became very apparent through the depositions that there was much more to it that we were just simply unaware of until we got into discovery. However.
So was the complaint amended?
No, it was not.
So how would
it was
the
never
defense
ended.
How would the defense know that there was sort of a backward looking focus from the time to the time prior to election night?
Because we told them. Officer Peel testified in his deposition that it was not just that single instance of speech, that it was the totality of his campaign involvement. Keep in mind that he was broadsided when he was pulled out of working a major case after 27 years, and not a criticism, not one thing said by his supervisors about there being a negative attitude or problems. And I submit to this court, that's because there wasn't. Everybody was negative about that administration, and that's what every single officer said. They were negative about the administration, just as Officer Peel was. He was no more negative than anyone else. And as far as we told him in the deposition, he testified to that. In the request for admission a year and a half before discovery closed, it said, is your case based on a single instance of speech on May 9th, 2007, and we denied it. And that's cited, too, in the record. So they knew it. If anybody was broadsided, it was me when they filed their motion for summary judgment claiming it was only one instance of political speech, not the totality of his involvement. And that's what we said in our brief in opposition to their motion for summary judgment. If you set aside and just don't even look at my motion for summary judgment and look at their motion and what it's based on, it's based on completely inadmissible hearsay of what they were purportedly told, meaning Birch, Chief Birch, or Assistant Chief Jolly.
Rebuttal time, you know.
I know, I just noticed that. Okay, thank you, Justice.
You know.
If you look back carefully, it's almost entirely based on inadmissible hearsay by one person, Terry Swickard. And if you look at everybody else's testimony, the testimony of the other detectives in that bureau, the secretary, nobody was affected by this. These were such three minor incidents that you had to grasp in your mind to even realize it. And one of the incidents that they bootstrapped occurred a year prior, and Officer Swickard said, we got into it, we were over it, there were no problems. But now they resurrect that from a year before to try to make it part of this. It wasn't until their reply brief in a footnote that they raised this issue about the pleading. And that's because we, the defense attorney, and the position we'd made clear in our case was it wasn't just based on the single instance of speech. It was based on the totality of involvement, and it became more and more clear as the depositions were taken in the case. And as if the courts will go back and look at what the defense cites to, those cites and that deposition testimony does not stand for what they say it does. And it should not. They shouldn't have been. And I would submit that the district court erred when they granted them summary judgment on simply inadmissible hearsay and the self-serving testimony of Terry Swickard. But I have to reserve some rebuttal time. I thank you so much for taking your morning after Easter to listen to our case.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Peters?
Good morning, Your Honors. Morning. On behalf of the defendants, Your Honor, first of all, with respect to this, what was pled and what wasn't pled, it's pretty obvious that there were no pleadings in the complaint that dealt with anything other than the election night speech. And when this thing came forward for summary judgment, the discovery was already cut off on June 10th. 2007. Both sides had already filed motions for summary judgment on September 14th of 2007. Even Officer Peel's summary judgment never referenced anything other than election night speech. We didn't deal with anything other than election night speech. And for the very first time on October 12th, 2007, in a reply brief filed by on behalf of Officer Peel, it suggested that his complaint should be supported by his overall support of Czarnecki during the mayoral campaign. Well, that's never been briefed. There has to be some fair notice to the defendants as to what they're being charged with.
Well, what do you make of Peel's response to the request for admission on whether it was related solely to the election night speech and his deposition testimony. What do you make of that?
How
can we deal with that?
Well, it's such a general assessment. I mean, he hasn't come forward with any evidence. He hasn't suggested any facts. Just to deny that it was not only based on that, but come forward with no facts doesn't get you anything.
He's given facts about what he did in the primary campaign, that he did other organizing things prior to election night.
Well, to be honest, none of those were ever charged. We had no idea he was making any complaint that those were violations of his protected speech. Frankly, he didn't really charge any. There is no evidence that I recall in the record where he was charging us with doing something proper prior to the election night.
Improper,
I'm sorry. Yes, thank you. And under the case I cited, that Ashcroft v. Iqbal, he's supposed to put sufficient facts in his complaint that if the court infers that they're true, that the court has enough there to believe that there was a cause of action that's plausible on its face. He didn't do that for anything other than the election night speech. And to come forward at such a late date. And this court has already, ruled in the Shanahan versus City of Chicago case that you can't amend your complaint in a brief responding to someone's summary judgment motion. And particularly here where the discovery had been cut off ages before. We didn't brief anything like that. It's terribly unfair, and there was no proper notice to the defendants so that they could defend against those claims. Officer Peel was not disciplined because of his political views. First of all, he wasn't disciplined at all. Had nothing to do with his political views. And the statement read to him,
it said because of the way he was handling his personal views, right?
Yeah, it said.
And then the newspaper calls shortly after the transfer, maybe the day after, and is told by the PIO that it's a disciplinary transfer.
Yes, the court reporter testified that officer never used the word discipline. That was a word that the reporter chose to use.
So the reporter inferred that from what the PIO said.
Yes, that's correct.
So at summary judgment stage, Mr. Peel gets the benefit of all inferences, doesn't he?
He gets the benefit of all inferences, but we're dealing here with a summary. They're going to have to show a prima facie case, and the evidence is actually unrebutted that this decision was made as of May 4th, 4 days before the election. We have the testimony of Chief Birch that he had made the decision on that date, that he went and talked to Mayor Olson. And informed him. He didn't discuss it. He informed him he was removing Peel because of his disruptive behavior. We have the testimony of Mayor Olson that happened on May the 4th. We have the testimony of Assistant Chief Jolly that he was told about a week before the transfer that Peel was going to be transferred out of the Detective Bureau. We have Officer Peel's in his motion for summary judgment and the facts portion of his admitting that Mayor Olson and Chief Birch discussed the transfer.
Assistant chief. Who's the chief of detectives?
The chief was Birch. And he's the one that had the authority, and the only one that had the authority to actually transfer.
Right, but the chief of detectives calls the day after the election and says, I've had it, this is enough, referring to his speech, and says he's got to go.
He's not a decision maker, Your Honor. Okay. Never has been, and the evidence was that already he had met in March to discuss with Chief Birch his removal from the Detective Bureau.
Was he told before the election, was the Chief of Detectives told that he was losing that detective?
No. There's no evidence of that whatsoever.
That seems odd.
And the Chief of Detectives, well, it does not to me, Your Honor, because before you go out and before you talk to the person that you're going to have to tell that he's being transferred, you don't want it to get around the whole department first.
You ought to be able to trust your chief of detectives, I would think.
The chief of detectives was the one, and he testified that in April, he had for sure asked for him to be removed. There was no qualms about it. He wanted him removed because of his disruptive conduct. And the fact that, he didn't know that the decision had been made, and goes in there and said, well, I definitely want him transferred now, which is what he said. He had already before that told him he definitely wanted him transferred. So, plaintiff still has to come forward with some evidence and she's admitted in the appellate brief that was filed in this court that meeting discussing the transfer occurred 4 days before the primary election. There's no reason, anyhow, to infer, based on the happening of this speech, that somehow that would have caused us to want to transfer him. I mean, why would we think that? What did the speech say? First of all, he'd been supporting Czarnecki for many months before that. Nothing ever happened. The testimony is unrefuted that other officers openly supported Czarnecki. They never got transferred or terminated or disciplined. Peel said himself he was no more vocal than the other officers. There was no reason to infer it. Plus, the speech that night, it wasn't directed at the city of Portage. It was not directed at Chief Birch or anybody within the department. He's talking and complaining about the newspaper endorsing a candidate in the primary, and he's talking about the sheriff, who has no connection, by the way, with the city of Portage. He's a county sheriff, endorsing Czarnecki.
Who was the sheriff at that time?
Lane. David Lane, I believe his name is, L-A-I-N. And so he's not related to the city. Why would we think that would be a basis for the city of Portage to all of a sudden cause him to be transferred? Especially when we have so much other evidence that there were other reasons that had been going on for some period of time. And, one of the incidents went back more than a year. I acknowledge that. But when you go up to the person who's your immediate supervisor and yelling and shouting at him and telling him, fuck you, to your face, to his face, you know, I think that that's pretty good reason for someone to have that in the back of their mind going forward when you start having other disruptive conduct. And most of it happened right during the end of the primary election. When he goes out, and for instance, when there was one incident where he ran to the scene because he got a call from his daughter, and there were Charnetsky supporters on one side of the street and Velasquez on the other side. His daughter was with the Charnetsky supporters. So he goes rushing out there, and when he is, he's confronted by a lady from the credit union who says the Charnetsky supporters are on private property. I want them to move. And he gets in a big argument with them and embarrasses the department. And then he goes up to Officer Raddick, and Officer Raddick, he tries to force him to apply a noise ordinance of the city of Portage against the other political party, against the Velasquez supporters. He's complaining about that loud Mexican music.
Must have been an exciting occasion. Are all elections there like that?
I have to admit, Your Honor, I'm not from the city of Portage myself, and so I don't know.
You can't dodge that. You're from Lake County.
Yes. Yes, you're right. I'm from Lake County. So, I mean, let's
get back to Judge Bauer's question. Has Portage had a history of problems with their election?
There is no evidence of that whatsoever. There are statements like that throughout counsel's brief that are completely unsupported. They are not factual. They should not be considered for purposes of the summary judgment. And they're repeated again in her appellant's brief. They should have no part in the decision here. There's plenty of evidence to support what happened and to support that the decision was made prior to the time. She has to come forward with some specific facts to show that there is a contest, there's a reason for a triable issue of fact. If she hasn't proven a prima facie case, we don't even have to be given a reason for the transfer.
This was a primary election, right?
And it was a primary election. And Velasquez, who ended up winning the Democratic primary, she's not an officer of the city of Portage. She wasn't even elected yet. And we have one incident where she says, well, Raddick said that, or Birch told Raddick that he got officer, or that Velasquez got angry. That was the reason for the transfer. Well, even if you believe that testimony, Your Honors, when did she get mad? What did she get mad at? I mean, there's nothing to tie it. It's all speculation. Maybe she got mad because she knew that he engaged in all these conduct, this misconduct issues that we brought before the court. We've come forward, even without her proving that there was a motivating factor, we've come forward clearly with sufficient evidence to show that there were valid, legitimate reasons that were not discriminatory. And she hasn't really contested him. He's admitted to virtually every incident. He just tries to sugarcoat it and say, oh, well, I really wasn't angry, or I really didn't swear, although he admits doing that to the chief detective. He does admit that. But all the other incidents that are outlined in the brief, he's admitted engaging in all of them. Now, the question here is, what did Chief Birch believe? He didn't have to personally see these incidents to make a decision. He's an administrator. He's the one that has the authority to do it. He relies on the people reporting things to him. And the only issue here really is, did he honestly believe that Officer Peel had been disruptive, and did he make his decision on that basis? You know, there's been ample evidence that that's the case. And I don't think that Officer Peel has done anything other than throw a whole lot of, you know, suspicion and general allegations and things, making it look like this is the most corrupt place on the face of the earth. But those are not facts that would be admissible in the evidence that should be relied upon in the court ruling on a motion for summary judgment. And I thought that the district court in this particular case, you know, did a really good job of assessing, well, what was in fact proven or what facts are out there versus just allegations. And this was no timeout room. That, you know, that somebody gave that opinion is another example of something that shouldn't be considered as evidence for purposes of summary judgment. This wasn't created for Officer Peel. This station officer position was created in the year 2000. A number of people had filled it previously. It was a very meaningful and important police duties that were performed by that office. And a lot of the police officers testified that they were very happy in that position. It wasn't a timeout room. And then what does he do? You know, instead of making any effort at all to do it, he immediately, you know, goes on sick leave, then he has his surgery, then he's on limited duties afterwards, so he admitted that he'd just have nothing but a desk job, even no matter where he was, even in the detective bureau, had he done taken the sick leave and had the surgery and so forth.
What happened to the officer who had held that position prior?
That officer was a patrolman, and that officer was Raddick, and he went back to patrol. That officer had never been in the detective bureau. He was always a patrolman prior to that time.
Well, was the... You mentioned the sheriff became involved directly in the city campaign for...
He just endorsed, at the end, Velasquez for mayor.
Just through the entire campaign or just at the end? Or?
Well, the only evidence that we have is that it was way at the end. I don't personally know, Your Honor.
If you run out of arguments, there's no constitutional requirement that you stay there.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Say if you run out of arguments, there's no constitutional requirement for you to stand
no,
there.
No, and I think I have, unless there are further questions from the court. I believe that the brief, you know, really says it all. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Brandt.
Judges, I just kind of jumped out at me. Opposing counsel said that Chief Birch's decision needed to be reasonable. What it needed to be was objectively reasonable. And I would submit to you, how objectively reasonable could Chief Birch's decision have been to transfer Detective Peel out of the Detective Bureau when Chief Birch didn't trust Swickard, the detective chief, enough to tell him when he called on May 9th, once again, say, I'm mad at Roger. He didn't tell him that the decision had already been made 5 days before. So how objectively reasonable could the decision have been made if he didn't trust Swickard enough when everything was based on what Swickard allegedly told Chief Birch? Additionally, it doesn't make sense that on May 4th, they have this meeting, and they may have very well had a meeting. We've never agreed that the decision was made that day, but they could have had a meeting. I'm not saying they didn't. But there were two, according to the employee service record, there were two other days after that all of these people were at the police department. So why not call? If the decision was really made on the 4th, why not call Detective Pillian and tell him that day? Why not tell him on the 8th? Call him in. Everybody was there, according to the employee service record. I would submit to this court that they didn't do it because they wanted to see how this primary came out. And because if Steve Charnowski won the Democratic primary and Officer Peel had been a major backer of him, then clearly they didn't want to, you know, create problems that might cause further problems. In addition, when we have this speech on campaign night making the newspapers, that made the city of Portage Police Department's administration, like Chief Birch and Terry Swickard, they were furious that Roger had the nerve to speak out. And keep in mind, he was, you know, there at campaign headquarters in plain clothes. He was just saying what he thought was right. And I would hope that, you know, many of our citizens will get involved and have and feel free to do that, to be able to speak out and support the candidate of your choice. That's what our country's been based on. That's what our Constitution's based on. And to suppress that, to punish somebody for that, is not only violative of the constitutional rights, it strikes at exactly why we have so much apathy in politics today. And I'll submit to you, judges, if you look back at both the appellee's brief and their underlying briefs in this case, the defense has never once until today claimed that they lacked notice or they were prejudiced in any way. Please go back and look at that. All they said is it wasn't properly before the court because it wasn't specifically pled in the complaint. You know why? And with all due respect to Mr. Peters, he didn't handle the underlying case. It was Mr. Elwood for the city of Portage. Mr. Peters has unfortunately stepped into a situation that he's come in after the depths were done, the briefing was done, the summary judgment was done. But if you look back at it, they didn't claim prejudice or lack of notice, and you know why? Because they knew. They knew that. This was a backdoor attempt for them to come back and them to try to take the upper hand by saying, oh, we made the decision on May 4th, so the speech on May 8th and May 9th, that couldn't have had anything to do with it. But again, if you go back and you look at the particular instances of this disruptive behavior, they didn't exist.
Are there any cities or towns in Lake County that elect the chief of police?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that I'm aware of in Indiana either.
Me either. I see that the red light, which is supposed to tell me to be quiet.
I'm serious about this question.
No, I'm.
Are you aware of the statute that sets up the city government, and it's structured in various ways throughout the state? But how often, is the chief of police elected?
I honestly am not aware of another circumstance. I don't, and I apologize. And I was not familiar with that statute, and I have to confess my ignorance in that area.
But thank you.
Thank you all very much for your time this morning.
Well, thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.